Hello, and welcome to Queering Eve, a spoiler-free podcast about the TV show Killing Eve, made by some queers. Hi, I'm Tamara, and I'm the one who's cutting her hair short tomorrow. Woo! For the first time in many, many years.
That is very exciting.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Nina, and I'm the one who watched and rewatched and then some the show Our Flag Means Death in the span of one weekend, and now it has taken over my life. I can't think about anything else, so I will try to get in the headspace of Killing Eve, but I make no promises, so I'm really sorry. I think it's very me that I'm using the introduction as an apology.
Hi, I'm Neya, and I'm the one who had caffeine today, which usually I don't. And that means I'm in a really good mood and full of energy right now, and I will crash during this recording, and then I will be extremely tired and cranky.
Apologize. So we both have apologies for our introductions.
I will apologize for nothing.
Okay, so we are watching Killing Eve Season 4 Episode 6 called Oh Goody, I'm the Winner. It was directed by Emily Atef and written by Kaylee Fuellen.
If we're gonna start with impressions, I would like to say that I didn't care for this episode, and I don't know if it was because I have been loving the past three episodes I loved, and I just had high expectations because of that, or because I am completely in a pirate situation going on right now. And it's hard for me to focus on anything else. But yeah, I didn't love this one. It was fine.
I also didn't love it as much as previous ones, but there were still some moments that I did really, really enjoy. And now that I think back on this episode, that's all that I remember. There's like four scenes that I remember that I think about, and the rest is just like a blur.
I mean, it sounds nice remembering just the good things.
Yeah.
When I first watched this episode, I had completely no opinion. I forgot immediately what happened because I also watched Our Flag Means Death and was in a very different headspace while watching it. But as I rewatched it today, I really enjoyed it. It's not like a high that the previous episode was for me, but it's like I just thought it was good. And there's some things that I really enjoyed, and it felt like it made sense when I was watching it.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That I will admit it did. Okay. We start this episode in a hotel room. Of course Villanelle isn't dead.
I felt so stupid. I can't believe we were like seriously discussing like her death.
I know.
I really felt so embarrassed.
I have a very, very real reason for why I would think that, because I have trauma from shows that did it's supernatural. From shows that did a thing in the last few episodes that made literally like negative sense, and everyone was like, it's impossible that they would do this, and then they did it anyway, and I was like, it's impossible that they would kill Villanelle, and yet what if they did that for the shock factor or something like that? Like, it was a real possibility.
For me it wasn't that, because I don't watch Supernatural. But I think because of all the mythology and stuff that we hear about, I don't know, it made an impression on me. So I had that in mind. So I was like, well, death is coming. And yeah, I think anything that would have happened, I would be like, ah, yes, dead.
Well, I will say, I think we thought she might be dead because the show made it seem like she might be dead. I think that's the actual explanation.
Yeah, that's also maybe true.
But yes, she is indeed alive.
She is indeed alive, although not doing so great. So in this hotel room, we have Villanelle with an arrow in her back, Eve, Pam, and Constantine. And we get this funny little scene where Pam is gonna get the arrow out of Villanelle's back. Eve does not like this idea. She wants everyone to go to a hospital, but for some reason, even though everyone here has been to a hospital, right now we can't go to a hospital. So Pam will do this because she knows stuff about anatomy. And then once Eve accepts this, she tries to hold Villanelle's hand, and yeah, Villanelle is upset and does not allow it. And then Pam pulls out the arrow, and I don't want to ever experience that. Thank you.
Same.
Yeah.
Naya?
No, thanks. This scene was fascinating. I love how worried Eve was for Villanelle, and just like when the arrow's out, Eve says to Villanelle, "You did great," which is like, I don't know, man. I don't know how to describe it exactly. Yep. And Villanelle really wants to get rid of her, which is interesting.
Yeah, yeah, new dynamic.
Then we go to Brandenburg, Berlin,
yeah,
where Caroline and Johan are chatting in the cabin,
yeah,
talking about how Johan has changed, but Caroline, according to Johan, has not, which he says is sad. And Caroline tells Johan that she will tell him who is killing the 12 and wants to torture and possibly kill him as well if he told her who ordered the hit on Kenny. And then Johan wants her to make tea.
First, he calls Kenny collateral damage, which...
He sure does that.
He deserves to die just for that.
Yeah.
And then the tea. And Caroline's reaction seems to be like, okay, I'll do it, but I won't be happy about it.
This is the second time in this season that a man was just like, ah, yes, do this for me, Caroline. And I am always amazed that she takes it so well because she wants to achieve a thing. I think I would not achieve anything because I would just be like,
misogyny.
Yeah.
Then we go back to that hotel room and Constantine comments that it was Gunn who shot Villanelle. And Villanelle's a little surprised. And then Eve says dramatically that all this happened because Hélène is punishing her. And Villanelle's like, get over yourself. Not everything's about you, Eve.
I didn't love how we heard about Gunn for the first time in the previous episode. And now she's just like tangled in every single thing that happens. Like, mention her in the first episode of the season or something. Yeah. You knew this when you started. You didn't have to do it like this.
Constantine also explains that Gunn didn't actually want to kill Villanelle, because if she did want it, Villanelle would be dead. Constantine asks Eve if she's not gonna apologize for shooting him, and Villanelle is like a little impressed that Eve shot him. She's like looking away and her face says kind of like, yeah, I'm still in love with you, but I won't show you because I'm mad at you.
God, I have the exact same note. It says Villanelle is still in love, actually.
In love, actually.
Yep. Yeah, I do think it's funny how little sympathy Eve has for Constantine's hand. Like, truly, I don't know how anyone will think that shooting someone in the hand is not a big deal. Like, the fuck?
Hands are that's incredibly insane. Sensitive. Super sensitive compared to most other body parts.
And quite important.
Quite important, and useful. Yeah.
But let's go back to some more misogyny.
Yes, let's do that.
So we go to the cabin in Berlin-ish, where Johan tells Carolyn what acupuncture is.
No, no, no. Mm-hmm. Where Johan mansplains acupuncture.
Yeah, that's what I have written down too. Tamara, do we just have the same notes?
It's very possible.
Are you the same person today?
I am just Naya on caffeine.
Interesting theory. I love it. So, Johan doesn't tell Carolyn who caused Kenny's death, but he says that he didn't do it. And then she gives him the information that he wants and tells him that it's Ellen who has been killing all of the 12 and is after him.
And I love this little part where Carolyn says, it's Ellen. And he says, Helen. And it's just the mirror of when of when Villanelle told Carolyn that it's Ellen. Oh, it's perfect.
Good stuff.
And Johan is apparently a little bit surprised by it being Ellen, which Carolyn interprets, because he is a misogynist, as him being surprised that it was done by a woman, and then has a line, I mean, anyone would think that the vagina was an invisibility cloak.
I also wrote that down, but I want to just move on from it.
Yeah.
You want to move on from my famous catchphrase that I always use?
I just think we can totally cut that out, but I think it's a fun, ironic quote if we think of a book where invisibility cloaks appear in.
Yeah. Yeah. I was also thinking about that. Caring about genitalia when talking about what, like, women and invisibility cloaks.
You're onto something, Nina.
Does this mean that Carolyn is a J.K. Rowling fan and a TERF?
I mean, she did play Aunt Petunia.
Jesus.
Yeah, Carolyn did that.
Yes. It was her side gig. That's what her spin-off is gonna be about.
God, you keep reminding me of these spin-offs, and I'm like, I forgot about them. Why did you remind me?
Back in the hotel room, Eve is watching Villanelle sleep, and she's like sitting there kind of guarding her, which just reminded me of our cat guarding us when we like make lunch or something, and she sits on the floor and just makes sure we're okay and no one is attacking us.
You know what it reminded me of?
Huh?
Edward watching Bella sleep.
Oh, yeah, obviously.
I'm not gonna say what it reminded me of.
No, you must know.
It's fucking Supernatural.
God, we should do a compilation of all the times that you mentioned Supernatural on this podcast.
I just, if we ever do that or even leave any mention of Supernatural in this show, I don't remember if we cut everything out so far.
I don't remember.
I just want to make it known that please genuinely do not watch this show. It's a terrible fucking show. Like, don't watch it. Then Villanelle wakes up and Eve psychically knows that there is a warm and cozy shirt in a closet. So she goes and gets it because Villanelle is naked from the waist up and just covered with a towel at this point. And Eve gives this shirt to Villanelle to put it on. And of course, Villanelle won't allow Eve to put this shirt on. So she tries to do it herself, kind of sadly. And Eve just sits there, watches her, and then helps Villanelle to put it on anyway. And Villanelle is just, in general, really unimpressed with this whole situation and says that Eve should go away and that she's serious about it and looks serious about it, but Eve does not care.
Yeah, it's an interesting combo of Villanelle saying that and then, like, this romantic music playing and they're looking at each other and Eve caresses Villanelle's hair, face, body. Her face.
Yeah, it's actually, this scene is like, the way Eve touches Villanelle is so romantic.
I know.
It's insane.
I thought, like, there was a lot of nuance in just their expressions.
Yeah.
So that's kind of part of why I really enjoyed their scenes together. And, yeah, I mean, I also just enjoyed this dynamic of Eve just really trying to take care of Villanelle, like, trying to... It's like she thinks she can make everything better if she just assumes this role of a caretaker. Like, that's her way of apologizing or not apologizing. And I love how Villanelle is over it and, on the other hand, also isn't.
Yeah.
Like, I really enjoyed Villanelle looking kind of angry and annoyed and really over Eve being there. And then when Eve touches her face and her hair, like, her expression kind of turns from angry to sad for a moment.
And she seems kind of flustered, even though, like, yeah, she's trying to get away from Eve.
And Eve buttons her shirt and Villanelle just watches her face and, I mean, it's hot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then they have this to say. Villanelle says, "You had me arrested." And Eve replies, "I thought locking you away might be good for me." And I want to talk about this.
Yes, this makes sense for her. Like, this is literally, yeah, what happened. But oh my God, Eve, don't just say that.
No, I thought it was fitting and good. And, like, I think sometimes being honest with Villanelle is a better idea than just trying to be nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think this was fascinating to me from the perspective of, if they pursue this relationship, this will be, like, the most selfish thing that they can do. Here, Eve is saying, basically, I tried being selfish by sending you away, but in fact, being with you is what is truly selfish. And I think this is good for them specifically.
Yeah, I love that framing of it.
Yeah. So you meant, like, if they end up together, it's because they are both selfish. Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah.
That I feel like, yes, that is the show.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's the show.
Yeah. But of course, Villanelle is still upset, rightfully so, and leaves the hotel room after she dresses up. Finally, on a new location, which is an old location. We are at the hotel restaurant where Constantine and Pam are talking about Pam's first kill, which is going to happen soon. And Constantine is again kind of trying to not necessarily push Pam away, but, like, to give her an out. And he's saying how both him and Pam will get murdered by the 12 at one point, because that's just what happens. But Pam says that that won't happen to her because she will follow rules, which is very funny. Oh, you baby. Will not, Pam.
Can I comment on that?
Anarchists don't have rules in this show.
No. Stop. I feel like it's fun how Pam says this, like, yeah, Villanelle doesn't follow rules, but I will. She thinks she's better than Villanelle in this regard. And it's fascinating because she is right, like, on one hand. Like, she completely saw Villanelle immediately for who she is, which is, like, stupid and reckless and impulsive. And all of that is true. But Pam has not followed rules once on this show so far.
Nope.
It's just for different reasons.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. So good luck with that, Pam. In the vicinity, Villanelle is walking along the beach. And Eve drives by in an electric cart? What do you call that?
That's what I called it.
Yeah, electric tiny thing that you can ride, but it's not a bike. And then Eve gets serious and says, "I thought I lost you there for a minute." And Villanelle is like, "And?" And "You did not like it." And she says this with a very earnest face, but it's also, again, just being like, wanting you is so selfish. Please want me back.
Yeah. Also, she says this, like, very romantic thing, and then immediately goes into, like, "So anyway, Lars Meyer this, and yeah, Caroline that, and the squat, and you can't walk away now, and..."
Yeah.
Yes. Although, I will say, on the first watch, I was also like, "Eve, why are you even bringing this up?" But then I was like, well, they almost just killed Villanelle, so maybe her ulterior motive is to get rid of the 12 so she can run away with Villanelle without death staring them in the face. And then I was like, I prefer this explanation.
I thought she just wanted to go on an adventure with Villanelle. Like, let's do this together. But, like, she had... It was, like, completely tone deaf.
I thought it was her once again repressing her feelings for Villanelle, even though, like, here she is doing this the least amount ever, but still, like, you know, yes, I care about this because of the 12, of course, and not just because of Villanelle, that kind of thing.
Well, just in general, they have very X's vibe throughout this entire episode, of course, throughout this entire season, but I did think in this episode it was even stronger. Yeah, so anyway, Villanelle absolutely does not care about the 12. She says she has other stuff to do, and Eve is trying to convince her that, oh, it's not gonna just end because you don't want to deal with it. But Villanelle tells her to just go. And Eve finally does that and leaves Villanelle with the mini car that Villanelle does use. So,
yeah,
there's that.
And again, I just love the tension between them and how Villanelle tells Eve to leave. And I don't know, I just love Villanelle in this. I love how she's processing this. And I also enjoyed Eve's line when she says, "I know this is gonna end badly, and I really hope that this is a promise that this show will keep."
God, what if we get a happily ever after?
No.
No. So after Eve leaves, she gets a call from Yusuf to do his role. Yusuf now gives us a recap of what happened on Killing Eve seasons 1-4, because Eve wants to be reminded, just like we do, why she's even hunting the 12. And the reasons are mainly Bill dying, Kenny dying, and a little bit how they stabbed Nico, which is the first time we even mentioned Nico in this season. Woohoo!
But not by name. He just said, "Your husband."
While I know that these things hurt Eve, maybe like half as much as they hurt me, I just feel like those are not the actual reasons why she's doing this. It is because of her obsession with Villanelle. Why are we pretending like there's something else here?
Well, she did hide this from Yusuf. Like, he knows about Villanelle, but he doesn't really know about Villanelle, you know? So Eve also tells Yusuf about Caroline and how she was involved with the 12.
I mean, and actually, she says Caroline is 12, which is, like, Naya pointed out in the previous episode, just, like, we're just doing that as, like, an age. It's fun.
Yep.
I mean, I know that it makes sense to say that way, but I also like thinking of it as an age thing.
I enjoy how thinking that this joke is funny is, like, something you would say, like, "I think this is funny because I am 12.
Yes. Good. Nice one.
Yes, and then Yusuf says that he will try to find where Caroline is so that Eve can go and chase her.
And Eve looks towards the sea.
True, yes.
Mm-hmm. On the other side of the beach, Villanelle is sitting down in a structure.
Truly.
Inside a structure.
Yeah, I thought it was like a train stop, but also it looked like the bleachers of a swimming pool.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it was just like a thing on a beach where you can sit down and relax.
Yeah.
Anyway, and then Gunn appears. Did you know right away that it was her? I did.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know how we're supposed to believe that Villanelle didn't.
Well, like, I knew it's Gunn because it's a new character and she had way too much personality for someone that is just giving away like a box of
drugs. Yeah, and also because we are watching a TV show that someone wrote and directed, and from Villanelle's perspective, that's just her life, I guess.
Yeah. Yep, that's it. So I totally believe
that.
It's
like a Truman Show situation and she knows that she's in a show.
You have to wait till the last episode to find out.
Yep.
What if that was the reveal?
I can totally imagine that, and like being then like Killing Eve becoming one of those shows that everyone hates the finale of.
Yeah, no shit.
It still has the possibility, the potential to become that show.
Gunn shows concern for Villanelle and gives her a box of painkillers. And we soon find out that this box of painkillers contains a message. The message reads, H. Helen wants you dead.
Helen?
I don't.
Sorry.
... Hotel Staatsmann, Berlin. And it's signed Gunn.
Yeah, just in case we still didn't realize this.
Yep.
Can I just comment? Seeing Gunn here, I wrote down, she looks just as purebred as Villanelle, because I couldn't remember that word that that other misogynist used.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I don't get it. She basically looks like Villanelle.
Yeah, but she's disheveled and more masculine and her hair is bushy. Then Villanelle calls Eve and tells her that Carolyn is in Berlin.
Can I ask why Villanelle decided to give Eve this information now?
I was so confused about that.
I was just about to ask the same question.
My theory is that she wanted Eve to go there so that there was a chance of her witnessing Villanelle's murder. But I don't think that's it. That's just like the only explanation that I could think of, because I don't get it.
I guess it's one of those things that don't make sense but propel our plot forward and we just accept it.
Yes.
Yeah.
But this one I genuinely don't like.
For me, it's like because there's so much less things to hate about the plot in this season, I am willing to let this one slide.
Okay.
Let's go to Bermondsey, London.
Let's do that. We get an important meet-cute where Pam meets Fernanda.
Fernanda! I did not think we would see her again.
Yeah, it's in a sad way that we are witnessing her. So, Fernanda is being her adorable self.
Yeah.
When she first sees Pam, she says, "Hey, baby!"
And she immediately hugs her.
She is so warm and welcoming. Oh, I would love to have her as the person that's like introducing me to my new job.
Oh god, yeah. Yeah. Fernanda also immediately tells Pam her life story and says that she's so happy because her mama is coming to visit her and she loves her mama and I will cry.
She says, "I was alone in this country and now look at me," which I thought was cute because she's literally like an ad. But you know, that is just in the pull yourself by your bootstraps mentality, where it's usually people that have like millions saying that. And she's just like has a very low paying job. But she's happy, which is what's important. She got a free coffee, her mom is coming to visit, she's doing great.
So she must die.
Yep.
Pam's not sure. Pam is like, I must check if this is correct. And she calls Constantine to ask if it's the right person because she's nice. And
oh, Pam.
Asks if Constantine knows what she did.
Oh, Pam. Pam doesn't understand anarchy.
Stop!
I'm just so happy that...
We'll get to a point where it makes sense.
Okay.
And Constantine is like, oh, Pam, we don't get to ask. We don't get to think. And he keeps telling her that she still has the choice of walking away.
I really hoped she would take him up on that. Like, obviously she wasn't going to, but... Fernanda.
Yeah.
Yes. First, though, we go to Kreuzberg, Berlin. Caroline comes to the squat.
Which is no longer a squat.
And has not been for years. What's the story? Were they evicted? What happened? I mean, they were evicted, for sure.
Yeah. So this is the squat that we saw in the previous episode. And she is there meeting Helen. And they talk about many, many things.
Wait.
Yeah.
There's ACAB graffiti. I just wanted to point that out. It says 1312. I don't think the show would... allow an actual graffiti that says ACAB. But it does mean ACAB.
Yeah.
Shit, okay. Okay, so what Hélène and Caroline talk about is the following. So first, Hélène is a little bit surprised that Caroline is there. And they have this dynamic where Hélène is trying really hard to be mean. And it's just really not working on Caroline.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious.
Yeah. I love how so far we've seen Hélène be the scarier person in every situation and just be like this otherworldly, I don't know, above you kind of person. And then here she's just like a little teeny tiny baby next to Caroline.
She's like an awestruck fangirl.
Yeah. Trying to act cool.
Exactly. So they talk a little bit about how Caroline isn't dead, even though Hélène tried to get her dead, and they both agree that there's still space to do that.
Yeah. Oh, that's nothing that can't be solved.
Yeah. Then Hélène wants to know if Caroline is one of us, which is one of the people connected to the 12. And Caroline's reply to this is, I threw up here once.
Yeah. She's like, sorry, I was just thinking about vomiting. Anyway, that's the chit-chat done.
I mean, she told her more about the vomiting.
Yeah, so Caroline refuses to say if she's working with the 12 or not. And I just really love Hélène's faces when she's trying to be mean and really, really failing. I just think... they're so good. She just, I don't even know how to describe this emotion, but it's like both surprise and annoyance and something else all mixed into one, and it's beautiful.
Mm.
Admiration is the third one.
Yeah. Yeah, admiration.
Okay, I have a question. Hélène says that she wants to know the name of Lars's superior. What? Isn't he like... the guy that created the 12, are we just supposed to understand that as she doesn't know anything or that there's something more going on here?
No, like, don't you remember that in this season we decided that there's one person who is in charge of the 12?
Yeah, and I thought that was him since he was, like, in charge of the meeting where they were like, the 12, the Chaos Club? Mm-mm.
No, I guess he's just one of the 12.
Okay.
Yeah, that's also how I understood it. There is actually one person who is leading the 12. But also, this is not going to happen, but I think it would be cool if actually there is no one person, but everyone in the 12 thinks that another person is in charge. So they literally can just rotate infinitely, because if the person who's in charge dies, he... Or no, this doesn't work. But anyway.
No. I think it makes a lot of sense that it's a circle and not like a hierarchy, because they are anarchists. Sorry, Lea.
So there's someone in charge. There is someone in charge, but the person that this person is in charge of doesn't know this person's name. So everyone thinks that there is one person in charge, they all know each other, they're all the 12, but they all think someone else is in charge, but actually no one is in charge. But not making any sense.
No.
I'm just trying to say it's really funny if everyone thinks there is someone in charge, but actually there isn't such a person. They're just like following an imaginary singular entity that's actually 12 other people. So Caroline gives a compliment to Elaine, saying that the foot fetish is a nice touch, or something along those lines, which Elaine is thankful for.
Yeah.
I think in this section of their conversation, she accepts that she cannot be mean to Caroline and is just like in awe with her.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we learn that their fathers were in love.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Why was that necessary?
So is Elaine's dad supposed to be the boy from the flashbacks?
Yeah, probably. I think so.
Okay. Yeah. Lol.
Then Elaine calls Lars a human equivalent of a lump of ham.
Yes, and I also wrote this down, but because, like, isn't she supposed to not know anything about him? Didn't she just find out his name, which isn't even a real name? Wasn't there the whole thing of her, like, not knowing anything? Ah.
But as you know, in this show, when one person finds out,
yeah, yeah.
Yes, yes.
I forgot about the diffusive learning thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess, like, she knew of him, so maybe she just decided that no matter who he actually is, he is a human equivalent of a lump of ham to her, because she would torture him like a lump of ham. Maybe this is her, maybe this is her plan.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, her, she has an inspiration on how to torture each member of the 12 by deciding what kind of a food they're like.
I was thinking maybe it's like when Villanelle is trying to get out of Irina that they're going to Cuba, and she's like, you'll have to wax all the time, like that Elaine is doing this by being like, he's the human equivalent of a ham, so that Caroline would be like, no, he's not, and then tells her everything about it.
That's also plausible. Back to Pam and Fernanda.
We see Fernanda talking to her, presumably, boss, and she's explaining to him that vegan options are good for business.
Ugh, Fernanda, you're so perfect.
Because apparently this sandwich shop has no vegan options, and if you're vegan, you can only eat bread and lettuce. And she, her opinion of this is just an ellipsis. She will rather not speak it.
Fernanda has a mind for business. She would do well for herself if the following didn't occur. Pam made a decision, and she goes and wants to have a talk with Fernanda, so she acts all upset, which I suppose she is, and they go into an alleyway where there is no one else, of course, even though it's a huge alleyway. It's like a whole street, but with bricks on both sides, so it's an alleyway, I guess.
And Fernanda is so caring.
Yes, Fernanda is like, Pam doesn't even say what's upsetting her, and Fernanda is like making assumptions based on what she knows about Pam, which would be pretty reasonable assumptions to make. And then Pam says, I'm sorry, and then they fight. And Fernanda puts up a really good fight, but is no match for Pam, unfortunately. And Pam will kill her with a syringe.
Mm-hmm.
But just before she does, she says, thank you for being kind to me. And then she stabs her through a leather jacket, because that's what you do when you have a person's neck at your disposal.
And that was her first kill. Not elegant,
but her first kill for the 12.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not elegant, but she did it.
She did it. She was successful.
How does it compare to the guy that Villanelle was mentoring? The clown?
Mean, he didn't do it. So.
Yeah.
First mentor.
Yeah. In Berlin, in Mitte, Eve is in a cab and she is driving to the squat where we just saw Carolyn and Ellen.
And luckily, Ellen just drove away.
Yeah.
Yep, and the person that arranged their meeting, for some reason, is still there.
And he knows what everything that's been going on.
So Eve follows Ellen.
So meanwhile, Carolyn has already arrived back to Johan's cabin. And he is having a tantrum because he found out what Ellen wants. Which, like, what was he expecting? This is the most obvious thing she could have wanted.
When this happened, I thought, this is embarrassing. And then Carolyn said, this is embarrassing.
That was really good.
Yeah. Anyway, he's being an asshole and he says that Carolyn killed Kenny.
Yeah, and she's like, okay, and?
Yeah, I like that she's like, yes, I know this, but that doesn't help me. I'm trying to do something else here.
Yes, but Lars is too upset to give it to her. At this moment, he needs to go fishing and leaves.
Does he go fishing?
Yes, he has.
He takes a rod.
My God, I love that. I missed it completely.
Yeah, that's what men do when they're upset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's how you deal with your feelings. You're like, ah, all the Pisces here are feeling things. And then we go to a roller disco, which makes me happy because I think a roller disco is the greatest place in the world. I have never been, so maybe this is just me romanticizing something that I would actually hate. But I dream of going there and I can't believe that when we were talking about like dates that we would want to go on, that I didn't say roller disco because roller disco is my dream date.
I was gonna ask, have you ever been to a roller disco? And now I know your answer and my answer is no as well.
Yeah, same, same. Last time I've been on roller skates, I was in kindergarten. I think.
Slovenia needs to get better.
The last time I was on roller skates, I was wearing Nina's roller skates and tried to skate a little bit and I fell and a child laughed at me. Nina, have you ever been on roller skates?
Yes.
You don't wanna.
I used to do roller derby / still do roller derby, but I am on a hiatus because of something called COVID-19.
Mm-hmm. So Konstantin and Pam are having food. Pam really found her style. Like, she's dressed in the same style, but with different items.
Hmm.
She really likes the hair thingy.
It suits her.
Pam and Konstantin are talking. And Pam is still upset about Fernanda.
I like this conversation because it's Konstantin showing that he already cares for Pam. He asked her if she enjoys embalming and she said yes. And then he talks about how usually the girls that he trains have no other option. She obviously does because she's competent. And that stood out for me because of how when Eve sees Pam, she's like, ah, yes, I know this. Look, this is a person with no options, blah, blah, blah. And we were like, Eve, what the hell? And I feel like this was just
inserted. Eve was wrong after all.
Yes, Eve can be wrong too. And I enjoyed it. I liked that Konstantin was the one to see that. And I like that it is acknowledged.
And we learn what Pam's reasons are for being here, which is that Ellen was the first person that really believed in her.
Sad.
And because Pam thinks that this is something she could be good at, which I get. I really get that.
I get the second one. I think the first one is so sad.
Yeah.
The second one. I get the second one.
We also find out why Konstantin is there, and it's because things just kind of snowballed, which I love.
This was so funny. Yep. This is my favorite line in this episode. It's hilarious.
And then Derek is there, because I guess this is a small town. Maybe we would know if we ever Googled it, which we didn't. And he calls Pam Pamster Hamster.
And... maybe this is my favorite line.
When he said that, I felt very strongly that this is the exactly the kind of person that Pam needs to date. Like, this is what she needs in her life. Someone who would call her Pamster Hamster. Also, I am upset that I had not thought of this nickname.
Yeah, I love that she didn't hate this nickname. It's very good.
Yeah. Of course, yeah.
Yeah, she thinks she's not supposed to talk to him, so she tells him she's busy. And then Constantine is like, no, you gotta have fun. Like, if you're gonna be killing people, you gotta have some joy in your life. And so she goes to find him again, and I really like how respectful he is when he sees her again, telling her not to worry, that he will leave her alone. And then she just kisses him, and they kiss, and it's nice.
It's nice. I wish they were roller skating, but this is nice too.
Yeah. It's a very nice kiss.
Maybe she doesn't know how to roller skate, and then he will teach her and they will have a little date.
If that is what happens in the next episode, I will be happy.
I think this happened off screen in this episode.
They could have kissed off screen and did this on screen.
In Berlin, Hélène is in her hotel room and she's on the phone with Gunn. She's talking in French and she looks not happy, but she's reassuring Gunn that she has all the confidence in her and that she will get better. I know you made mistakes, but you will fix yourself. And then as she hangs up, she says, idiot, but in French.
Idiot.
While doing this, Hélène is wearing only a vest, which looks amazing.
Then she decides to eat a chocolate, because this is a very fancy hotel room where you get chocolates. And then her phone rings, and she spits the chocolate out into her hand, and then kind of brushes her hands together and goes to pick up the phone by saying,
I think this was my new favorite thing that Hélène has done.
Yep.
And what she says on the phone is, let's have Pam do it, a challenge.
Yeah, there's a new murder coming up for Pam.
Then she sits on her bed and then she lies down or like falls back, which I don't know about you, but I so associated this with Killing Eve because of the God Untired thing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I associate it with this show, so I always like seeing it on this show.
And then what happens?
Then we slide down with the camera and we see an itsy bitsy villanelle under the bed. I don't know why I said it that way.
It's because it's true. Hélène is not alone. Villanelle is under the bed with a knife and she is looking good.
Yeah. She looks really good under that bed.
Oh, yeah. And she's contemplating cutting Hélène's hamstrings. But before she can do that, someone knocks on the door. It's Eve. So now we have three actors in this game. So Eve came to confront Hélène. She wants to know mainly about what Hélène and Caroline talked about and if they are working together, which Hélène denies.
By saying, please, she wishes, which is just... So in the scene with Hélène and Caroline, I feel like Hélène seemed like such a, I don't know, like a middle schooler talking to a high schooler and being all like, oh my God, that person is in high school. That's so cool. And then like to her other friend in middle school being like, she wishes she was my friend. And I enjoyed this dynamic.
Yeah. Eve came for information. Eve is on a mission. And on the other hand, Hélène is like, why are you in such a hurry? Shouldn't we fuck first? she's like kind of trying to distract Eve from what she wants. And she also wants to fuck Eve. And she's like, first we kissed, then we had a bath, and now sit next to me on this bed.
And when she mentions a kiss, mm-hmm. we go back down to Itsy Bitsy Villanelle. Mm-hmm. I hate that I'm going with this. And she makes a face.
She's kind of like impressed and also disgusted. Upset.
Yeah, there are so many emotions there. So much is happening and I love all of it.
Yeah, incredulous. Let's name more of them. Annoyed.
Jealous.
Jealous is an obvious one that we haven't named yet. You're right.
Yeah, yeah.
Confused. Intrigued.
Turned on.
Yeah.
And then Villanelle hears this idea about Eve sitting down and eventually fucking Hélène. And she's like, not on my watch. Mm-hmm. And she does the thing that I, like, this is the horriblest body horror thing that happened on this show for me.
I get that.
Oh, I can't. Oh, can someone else?
I mean, she does the thingy on the footsies and then Hélène is acting way too chill about it. Like, I mean, it does hurt her and stuff, but I would just, like, scream and fling myself out of the window.
So Villanelle cuts Hélène, which of course means that now everyone knows she's in this room. Mm-hmm. And she gets out from under the bed.
She rolls out from under the bed, which is a very cool move.
Mm.
Well, my note on this scene, my main note is Villanelle looks so hot.
She does.
She looks so good. My fucking God.
I think a lot of it is just how she's dressed and what her hair looks like and stuff. But I think a lot of it is just like the attitude. I love the mood she's in for this.
Oh yeah, she's just angry in the hottest way possible.
Yeah, the look she gives Eve is like all of the emotions she was feeling before, but also, like, really? And fuck you? And just, like, it's so hot?
And also, aha!
What a big look.
Yeah. So then Villanelle and Hélène fight. And while this is happening, there's this part where Villanelle drops her knife. And the knife slides to the part of the room that Eve is in. And Eve, instead of walking two steps and handing it back to her, decides to throw it in Villanelle's direction, which goes horribly, of course, and cuts Villanelle. It's funny.
I wasn't sure if she was, like, pointing it at Villanelle, as in, here you go, or I will stab you. And if she was throwing it at her, as in, like, here you go, or I will stab you. Like,
oh, I definitely understood it as, here you go, also I can't throw. Ah!
yeah, that's how I read it.
Yeah, no, it's the correct way, but I thought it was fun how Hélène was like, Eve! And Eve was like, no, I'm on her side.
Also, I love Villanelle when she has to go get the knife. Just the look that she gives is great.
Yes. So then, after some fighting, Villanelle straddles Hélène, and Hélène just kind of lies there and waits to die.
Yeah, she says, make it glorious.
Yeah, and Villanelle cuts her throat.
Do you think that was glorious?
No, I think it was average.
I think so too, and I think that's right.
But Eve does not agree with us because Eve is shocked and then turned on, as is her usual way of watching Villanelle kill
horrified
people.
Horrified and horny, Eve.
Yep.
So, is this lesbian sex?
The looks that they give each other, or
no, Villanelle? No. This is not lesbian sex. This is lesbian striptease.
Murdering one's girlfriend in front of her.
I didn't feel it as lesbian sex. I think murder can be lesbian sex in a lot of ways, but not this.
I felt like this was lesbian sex.
Was it between Villanelle and Hélène?
No.
Or Villanelle and Eve?
Yeah.
Okay. I stand by striptease. Yeah, but despite Eve being super turned on, this does nothing for Villanelle, who is still upset and says that she's done with Eve and leaves.
Yep.
After this altercation, Eve is sitting in a garden somewhere in Berlin, and Yusuf calls her.
She's like sitting on the ground, visibly shaken and not knowing what to do.
Yeah, she looks so distraught. I feel like in this episode, for the first time in this season, she's been looking very, like, yeah, distraught and confused and not as powerful as she was before.
Not in control.
Not in control, yeah. And in this scene specifically, that is at its peak.
Yusuf calls her, and the info that he has as a plot device this time is...
Cobra cabs!
Cobra cabs, which is the name of the cab company that Carolyn used.
And Eve is so relieved to get this information, because she feels like, oh, thank God I have a mission again. I can focus on something else and stop thinking about what just happened, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So to Cobra cabs we go.
There might be just one cab. We are in a taxi garage where a guy is sitting.
This guy that we meet here calls Eve a queen because he knows how to respect a woman. No. That is not what I would say. But, well, whatever. And he is very into Eve and willing to help her out. Well, not at first, because he has a moral code.
Mm-hmm. When he says that he has a moral code, she looks confused. She like she doesn't understand why would anyone have a moral code at their workplace, or I guess at all.
Yeah.
It's very funny. And then like we see the gears in her head turning and she reads this guy and knows what to say.
It was really interesting to me because to me, she looked at first like she's gonna do a character.
Yeah, same.
Like she started speaking in a different way, but then she just decided to tell him the real story.
Yeah.
Which mm-hmm. is that Carolyn's a terrible boss and that she made Eve a pawn in her international killing ring, got her shot, and never paid her. And she asks if this also breaks the moral code, and the guy has no further questions, but confirms that indeed this does break his moral code, and therefore he will help her.
How do you feel about this character?
Love him.
This guy?
Mm-hmm.
I would die if I met him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But he's very fun as a character.
Yeah, exactly same. Like, if I was in the same situation, I would be so uncomfortable, but it's still kind of funny to watch.
Mm. I just felt so embarrassed looking at him. Like, I just felt this... I felt mortified looking at him. And... But, like, in a good way, like... I loved what a specific character this is for us to interact with for like a few minutes. And this guy exists. And
oh yeah.
I love that this show decided to put him in the show.
Well, this guy that I don't think we ever get his name right. So he calls his homie. And then while they wait for this homie to come over there because this needed to be done in person for some reason, he gives Eve a show with those acrobatic props / things that you beat people with.
It's some sort of juggling adjacent activity.
Mm-hmm.
And he is very into it and chooses the background music, which is some kind of metal. And it's very good. It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was very pure and embarrassing and good.
Yeah, so then Fred arrives.
Mm-hmm.
Fred is very cool.
Yeah.
Hot.
Fred has a neck brace and is the only person who drives that far away in Berlin, which is why Caroline switched cabs from Cobra cabs to Fred.
So Eve wants to find out where Fred delivered Caroline to. And Fred is like, I don't know what they say exactly.
It's like, it's so hard to tell because so many people, drive around so many people every day.
And then Eve is like, if you want a bribe, can you just say it?
You just tell me how much?
Yeah. If you want a bribe, can you just tell me how much? Which I love. It's great.
And it's so good. Person. Remember when she tried to bribe that person in the previous season? I loved seeing her in the other role.
Yeah, much better in this role.
Yeah.
So Eve gives Fred 50 euros. And the guy's like, whoa, let's chill. 50 is a lot. And Fred agrees.
I want to ask Caleb Whelan, what does she think you could buy with 20 euros in Berlin? Like, I'm going to buy 2 beers with this bribe. Great.
Top a shit. Brunch. Right?
Mm-hmm. One brunch.
Yeah,
one brunch.
You could buy a brunch. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, Fred does agree though that 20 is fine. And Eve is also fine with 20, but only Fred has change.
Yep. It's good. Yep. It's good. It's wholesome. It's good. It's great.
Yeah.
These are good people. We don't meet many good people on this show, but here we do.
These are them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And these are their stories.
Sorry, I just, these are they, them, is what I have.
I feel
which
like...
Which probably.
That's correct. Yeah.
Fast forward, Eve is at the cabin in Brandenburg.
I wish we saw the scene where Fred takes her there.
Of course.
Yeah,
Just Eve in cars is something that I often miss in this show.
It's a good part of the show. They do it well.
Mm-hmm.
But alas, we are here in the woods.
Yes, Eve is trying to sneak up on Caroline, but it does not work as she steps on a twig.
Mm-hmm.
So Caroline hears her and shushes her away. And then they talk behind a big tree. Caroline tries to convince Eve that killing Lars would be a bad move. Eve, to retaliate, tells Caroline that she knows that Caroline is part of the 12 or that she's the original member. And then Caroline tells her that no, she was just infiltrating an anarchist group.
I love the idea that she was infiltrating an anarchist group because that's like, because anarchists are so dangerous. And I guess she got like really important intel about like how they will organize a protest or like cook food for houseless people or like at worst destroy some property. I don't know. Seems like a worthy cause for an intelligence agency.
They were revolutionaries. Johan and his chums had idea about causing chaos. You know, just disrupting the status quo or whatever. But of course it went astray. Because power inevitably corrupts.
Yeah, because, see, Caroline knew in advance that these specific anarchists would get power and that would corrupt them and that's why they would become dangerous.
Like, obviously it is correct that whatever... A lot of people, no matter what their values are when they get power, that ruins them because power has that effect, blah, blah, blah. Yes, we know this. But yeah, it's hilarious that this was then connected to this random anarchist
collective. I mean, it's either that you know, that Carolyn knew this in advance, or that, like, every anarchist collective in every country around the world actually secretly has undercover MI6 agents and KGB agents among them.
I mean, to be fair, I was thinking about this being during the Cold War, and obviously England wanting to not have anyone who could have, like, any ideas that could possibly have anything to do with communism to be in there. Yeah, this makes complete sense to me. Obviously, I believe that MI6 did this 100%.
Yeah, like, I don't know what MI6 thinks or does, or, like, what their specific worldviews are, but I do think that, Naya, you are talking from a standpoint of someone who does know what anarchist groups do, and I don't think that these people knew that, and that's why they did think that it was necessary to infiltrate them.
I guess, like, that's true. Like, Trump does actually think that Antifa is somehow a threat to him or whatever.
Anyway, after Carolyn gives this eye-opening speech, she says, "I am not 12. Which, again, is funny, and also reminds me of when Irina is in the car with Villanelle, when Villanelle kidnaps her, and Villanelle is talking about the waxing, and Irina is like, "I'm not 12.
Oh my god, that was a great parallel.
What if that was actually a commentary on how Irina is not working for the 12?
Wait, what if Irina is the one?
yeah.
This is my theory now.
Cool.
Constantine is Lars and Irina is one. What a powerful family.
Yeah. Okay, so then Carolyn begs Eve to let her do her thing.
Carolyn reveals that she is doing this for Kenny, and Eve reveals that she is not doing this for Kenny.
Yeah!
Which is very funny, because Yusuf just said that she is doing this for Kenny.
Yep.
So we know that she's not doing this for Kenny, but what is she trying to say to Carolyn?
I know.
I don't know.
Carolyn did not have to know this. Eve keeps on saying these truths in this episode that I don't think are necessary, okay? I agree with you that, like, Villanelle appreciates hearing the truth and stuff, but you don't have to be such a bitch.
What is she trying to say to Carolyn?
I think maybe she means it in a way, this is way bigger than Kenny.
Yeah,
like, this is.
I am looking at the bigger picture, not just.
Yeah.
Kenny.
Villanelle, bigger picture.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
And Carolyn asks for just one evening with Johan so that she can get what she wants. And Eve says fine and leaves, and we don't see her for the rest of the episode. Then, my favorite part of the episode, Johan comes back right when Eve leaves, and Carolyn decides that the best way to show that she is just chill and was not just talking to a coworker is to hug a tree and pretend to be, like, you know, feeling nature. And
she does this while saying, tree.
Just how you do it, you know? I think it is perfect. And I know that, like, it does not make any sense for Carolyn to be doing this, but I think it makes sense for someone who is, like, into acupuncture to believe that this is a thing that someone would do.
If I saw Carolyn hugging a tree, I would be like, oh, I'm gonna die. So, let's hear more from this misogynist. He says, "You're not like the other women." So, that's all I have to say.
"You can keep up with me." Barf.
Why does she have to keep dealing with these misogynists?
Yeah, I think it's fun how Killing Eve the show introduces, like, several prototypes of misogyny Like, we had the guy, the toes-nose guy, that was the kind of gruffy misogynist, like, no-filter misogynist. And then we have Johan, who is the intellectual misogynist. And, yeah, it's just, you know, various flavors.
Can I just say that Eve would love it if someone said this to her?
Because she's not like other girls.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but she comes in just like a little bit too late to hear that.
And Carolyn almost gets a name from him.
Yeah, he was like kind of trying to hold her hand.
Yeah.
Which she would never allow if it wasn't for the promise of a name.
Yeah, she's done a lot in these episodes that she would never allow if it weren't for having to find out things. But then Eve storms in and ruins everything.
She says that Lars should really lock his door and then shoots him.
In the shoulder.
No questions asked. In the shoulder. And then Carolyn is like, Eve, no! And then she shoots him in the head.
Well, first she says, how does it feel? And then, not waiting for an answer, shoots him in the head.
It's true. I don't know what she was talking about. Being shot in the shoulder? Was like that what she was referring to?
Yeah, she's into that. You know how she shot Constantine in the hand, then like in the shoulder. So she's just like experimenting. And being like, what works? What could be my signature move?
What's her reasoning here, my guys?
I think she is having a breakdown after seeing Villanelle kill Helen. Helen?
Genuinely, I think Eve just wants to, like, murder all of the 12 and end it. Like, that's her plan. She's gonna kill everyone and then it's gonna be over.
I think Eve wants chaos.
Yeah,
and Carolyn's gonna strangle me, shoot me in the head.
And Carolyn points out that Eve can't kill them all because they will just keep replacing them over and over and over.
Yeah,
and
which goes well with my theory of a circular leader that is all of them.
Then when Eve leaves, Carolyn suddenly has an idea that Johan might have a notebook in his pants for some reason.
And he does!
And what? He does!
And she opens it and it seems very full and she seems very pleased.
Yup.
Yeah.
And we will never find out.
Eve goes back into the city and she is walking by the Berlin Wall, drinking, and I guess just being kind of upset.
I think it's important to say drinking from a bottle. I think this this gives you a specific vibe.
Drinking hard liquor from a bottle.
Yes.
That's an even more specific vibe.
And then we move to a completely new location. It is, I will mispronounce this, I'm sorry, Fesgar Island, Scotland.
We finally go to Scotland, where they have peat moss.
Exactly, exactly. This is where we are going.
Have you ever been to Fesgar Island?
No, but I really, really want to visit some of those Scottish islands. That's like, if I ever go to Scotland, this is my number one plan. It's to go to some of those islands that they have.
If I go to Scotland, I want to see the Loch Ness Monster.
Nice.
I have also obviously not been there. Would happily visit. Have you ever been on like an uninhabited island? I'm not sure this one counts as uninhabited, but...
I don't think so. No. I haven't been to many islands.
No, I don't think. I mean, maybe like one of the little ones in Croatia.
I've done exactly that, Nina, what you said, which is I swam to one in Croatia. It's like this tiny, tiny island where you like walk around the circumference in like 7 minutes. And seagulls live there and some mice. And
I did not expect that you have a reaction, sorry.
Yeah, and I've done it mostly for the challenge of swimming there and back.
Mm-hmm. Cool, that's cool. So Villanelle is in a boat and she's oaring to the island. Mm-hmm. When she arrives there, she's like in full, I mean, we will talk about this in Uti, but she is like in full hiking slash survival gear. She goes on the island and walks somewhere and there are goats.
Yes, there are goats.
Then we see Gunn carrying a goat.
Villanelle greets her and announces herself by saying, "Hey, my back hurts," which, like, what a pickup line.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. You could use that often. Context, Nea's back hurts often. Anyway, then Gunn puts down the goat and they fight. There were many fights in this episode, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Huh. Anyway, this one is just for funsies.
It's like what Eve and Yusuf did, but more hardcore and cooler and more fun and hotter and more interesting to watch and just better.
Yeah.
And then they decide to end this fight by falling off a small cliff.
And they're lying down on the ground and looking up, like in that scene in episode 2 after Villanelle falls down after twirling with Jesus. So that made me think as Gunn as like a part of Villanelle, but better because not Jesus. And also, yeah, like she has many things in common with Villanelle, blah, blah, blah.
They just look
the same.
The same.
Yeah, she's an older version of Villanelle.
Yeah, it's true.
And, like, not only do we get the scene of them looking up, we also get a scene of the sky and it's turning, just like in episode 2.
Yep.
Then they laugh happily and Villanelle asks if she can stay.
This scene brought me so much joy. It's just, you can really see Villanelle having fun. She doesn't often have fun. And here she found someone who understands how to have fun with her. And I want her to have a friend. And it's just, I can imagine her just living there with Gunn. Mm. It won't happen, but it would be just real nice.
And that's the episode.
Yay!
Let's go to Uti. In this episode, Villanelle wears 3 outfits. The first one is the one where there is surgery performed on her and in the time after. I am describing the outfit as it is when she is walking down the beach.
Oh, so you're not counting the towel?
I'm not counting the towel, although I did consider it. She is wearing the pants from her previous outfit, so the orange pants. And then she's wearing a plaid man's shirt, I guess. So this plaid shirt is in like dark grays or something like that. And she is wearing some, I guess, the same sandals that she wore previously with this. The second outfit is when she kills Hélène. She's wearing a denim look. So she is wearing denim bootcut jeans, a denim shirt. Underneath this, she has a gray t-shirt. She also has a white belt and some black shoes. And very importantly, her hair is kind of done in a messy way.
Yes.
And it's just so hot. Then the final outfit is the survival outfit, let's call it. She's wearing a mustard yellow raincoat, a black jumpsuit that also kind of looks like waterproof or like water resistant at least, and it has a whole bunch of zippers, but those zippers look like they actually have, like, it's not, maybe not a fashion thing, but actually there are like pockets that you put stuff in, I don't know. And also there is some electric green, I know that's not a real word, but like really bright green peeking out of her jumpsuit. And I don't know if this is just this jumpsuit's lining somehow, or is she wearing like a separate piece underneath this? Because it kind of looked like both.
I love electric green, like as an idea of a color. Good term.
And she is also wearing black or very dark gray hiking shoes. So, which one is your favorite?
Mine is the denim on denim. I will say something controversial. I am not a fan of denim on denim, but...
Controversial?
That's such a 2010s opinion.
Yeah. I don't like that I have this opinion. I am embarrassed. I feel a lot of shame about it, as I do about literally everything. I am a Catholic, after all. But I am choosing this outfit because of the whole look, which is Villanelle being so hot with the messy hair. I'm choosing this outfit for the hair. Generally, if I was just looking at the clothes, I would like the plaid shirt, so the first one, but I am choosing the second one because attraction.
I feel similarly, like I would pick the second outfit for the look on Villanelle's face that she gives you, which absolutely is related to the outfit. But no, I will try to just base my rating on the outfit itself. And in that case, very predictably, it's the first one for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, it is denim on denim, just straight up, because I have nothing bad to say about it. I think it's amazing. I think it looks great. I love the color of the denim. I love the layering. I even love the belt, even though by itself it looked kind of ugly, but I think it fit really well in this outfit. So 10 out of 10 for me.
I mean, I also really enjoyed this outfit. It was just second place for me, but I did like unironically love it.
Yeah, and this made me think that I did like the shape of it. I thought it looked cool on her body.
Yeah. I even like the bootcut jeans, which we are definitely in this phase of fashion trends where people are starting to complain about how bootcut jeans are coming into fashion again, but they haven't accepted this yet, but they will in like 2 years.
Yeah, and this I am that at. Person, and I know this about myself. I know that in 2 years I will be like, this looks good, and yet right now I'm like, not yet.
Yeah, it is interesting how that works. I am the same, and I think most people are, obviously, since...
That's how fashion works.
That's how fashion works, yeah. Now we have a music corner for the first time in a while.
The first time this season, I think.
Yeah, I didn't prepare like a music corner. I just had notes on music enough times that I was like, let's just do a music corner. And most of this is actually that I accidentally paid some attention to the lyrics of the songs that were made for the show. And I think, obviously, like, if we wanted an actually good analysis of the show, we should have been doing this the whole time.
I agree, obviously,
Because we did notice them a lot in previous seasons, when they were like really on the nose and fun. And in this season, there are new songs. And I think there are some of these are played for the first time in this episode.
Yeah.
So, you know, when Eve helps Villanelle to dress and she touches her face and hair gently.
Yes.
Here's the lyrics of the song that plays. Don't take her. She's no good to you. Trust me, she will hate you like I do. So, fun, right? This must be from Villanelle's perspective, and it's about her not trusting Eve. I mean, obviously, I don't know if
No, I think it was another obvious lyric, but it's nice. I really liked how that song sounded in that scene.
Mm-hmm. Then there is just like this little snippet, and this plays just when Pam murders Fernanda. And these lyrics are, "Yes, I love you. I'll do anything you say."
Mm. This is foreshadowing. Actually, Pam is in love with Helen. Helen.
No. Actually, Derek, or what's his name?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He is at the top of the 12.
I love this theory, obviously. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Then there's one that I saw that we had heard before, but this one plays sort of like as Eve is finishing her phone call with Yusuf after Villanelle told her to go away, and then we switch to Villanelle sitting alone on that mysterious construction. "I once had a lover, or did lover have me? It set me free, it set me free." I love this one.
When you started that, I thought you were going to sing Nana Grisola.
I'm not sure. Yeah, me too. love that.
Yeah, it's just genuinely some really compelling commentary on Villeneuve.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
Nice.
I just wanted to say, I know that in one episode I mentioned how the music was different from the previous seasons, and that I found it distracting and I didn't enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
I found the music in this episode very noticeable, but I really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. And then the last one is not as Villeneuve. It starts playing as we see Eve walking out of the cabin after she killed Johan. And then it plays into the next scene, which is Eve walking by the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And it just plays as Carolyn says, "They'll replace him over and over and over and over." And these lyrics are, "I know your heart is broken. No matter how hard you try, you'll do it all over. No one can save you." And yeah, this all over is playing just with that over and over, like it's really nice. And then, "No one can save you, not her, not even him." And this is already playing as we watch Eve. And I think it even plays then into the next scene when we see Villanelle rowing. "One day you'll thank them, the heartbreakers, for the hard love. The only thing that could set you free, that will set you free, hard, soft, head strong. Then just when you think it couldn't get worse, that's when you'll hold tight. That's when you'll hold tight. No one can save you." Love that. No one can save anyone. They were all set free by love. And they will all die.
Romeo and Juliet.
Died.
But to finish up the music corner, there is one last song that plays at the end, which was not written for the show. The song is playing as Gunn and Villanelle meet. And at first I was confused, like, why are we not listening to a Scottish song, right? Like, it's usually where we are. But it's in French, and Gunn is French, so that's the connection, I guess. Anyway, the song is so fun. It's so good for the scene. And I must say, there is a slur in the lyrics. The slur is literally the title of the song. And it's a slur for Romani people. And it's there. I wanted to acknowledge it. But I managed to ignore it. And it just enjoyed the song. And this song is actually by Dalida, who we had talked about before.
I don't know why, but this feels very exciting to me.
So I really enjoyed thinking about music a little bit, and now these were my thoughts, and that was the music corner.
Now it's rating time.
Whoop! I can start.
Do it.
My rating for this episode is the movie I Can't Think Straight.
Hmm.
I absolutely do not remember this movie at all. I don't even know if I liked it or not. However, I do remember the sexual energy that it has.
Uh-huh.
And I felt this same sexual energy in this episode. Well, sexual and romantic. And I just couldn't help but think of this movie somehow.
And also earlier you said that you don't remember anything about this episode except for like four
exactly.
scenes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
My rating is the TV show Riverdale.
Wow.
Because I'm just like, huh? Why is this happening? That's mainly it. I wasn't very inspired for this rating because this episode didn't really inspire me much.
Lastly, my rating is, and I am so sorry, but my rating is the TV show Our Flag Means Death. First, I thought about just choosing this rating as a joke. Because when I was watching this episode, I thought that the person playing that guy in the cab company looked like Captain / Admiral Badminton from Our Flag Means Death. But I wasn't seriously considering choosing this. But then today I rewatched this episode and I just felt this energy between Eve and Villanelle, that is exactly what I imagine the second season of Our Flag Means Death should be. And I will not say anything more specific, not to spoil the show, but that was a big thing. So that's the real reason. But I also had some fun moments of thinking of the show.
Can I just comment on what you said about how this is how you imagine the second season? Mm-hmm. While I was watching this show, Our Flag Means Death, I thought a lot about how the main relationship made me feel the way even Villanelle in season one made me feel, which was a lot of internal screaming, mostly, and just like the need to rewatch, because they were very good feelings.
Yeah, I just, that makes a lot of sense, because that was Eve and Villanelle flirting. And now this is Eve and Villanelle post-breakup.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this dynamic of like betrayal, but not letting go of your feelings. And on the other hand, trying to do anything to make the other person forgive you. And that's what I think is to come. Suddenly Nina will love this episode. I'm killing you.
Yeah.
But the tiny things I also wanted to mention was first when Eve shoots Johan and Carolyn comments, "Well done, you've killed one." This made me think of Jim and their quest to kill all of a number of people. That. And then the other little thing was just the scene of Villanelle rowing at the end really reminded me of a scene of Steed rowing at the end of the season of Our Flag Means Death. Anyway, if you're listening to this and you had not yet watched this show, yes, it is that good. Yes, you should watch it. I mean, I don't want you to now go into it with too high expectations and then be disappointed. So maybe like, yeah, it's cool. It's okay. Yeah, try it out.
After this recording, we will watch it for the third time.
Cool. Do you still feel like it's offensive to the show that I chose
yes.
it?
Not to the show, to the... Oh, yeah, to the show. But it's okay. I know
really
that you
liked
the
episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, second to last, we have a game, and the game that we are playing today, which is just like, we should just call it a question, and then say the question that we are answering today. is,
yeah,
if you were the guy that's working for Cobra Cabs and you were waiting for Fred to arrive, and while you're waiting, you have the attention of a person that you like, what kind of performance would you put up?
That's a good game. I would unicycle while juggling, which is a thing I used to be able to do for like 5 seconds. So it would be appropriately like a circusy thing and also embarrassing.
That's what you went for. I thought you were gonna say you would lip sync.
Oh no, that's way more correct. Oh yeah. Oh, that is the same vibe. Oof, I love lip syncing. And that's it.
It's a hard question for me because I don't like being observed. And I don't think I have many skills that are observable. But Nina suggested this, and it is that I would just do a workshop with the person. There are many topics to choose from, but the latest one that I've been working on is a seminar. yes, I would do a whole seminar.
Fred is taking a really long time.
On queer family structures under capitalism.
I feel like that would be very educational and appropriate for Eve.
Thank you.
Yeah, I agree. It would be great. Well, if I really had to perform, I would probably play guitar badly. But realistically speaking, what I would actually do is show her K-pop music videos.
Yeah, you would. Yeah.
Please watch my playlist.
You would have like a PowerPoint presentation on K-pop music
You'll
videos.
You already have it ready.
Yeah, that's just one group. That's what I would do.
Nice.
Eve would get educated. Well, good. I guess she probably does know.
Yeah,
that
she's...
K-pop exists.
Yeah, she
but
might.
Also. Probably doesn't know anything about it at all.
Yeah, I can see that.
Okay, time for predictions. I have a topic maybe for our predictions, which is we heard that Pam will get a challenge for like to kill someone. And I want to know who you think that is. I thought about this for a little bit and there are some that are just too much of a challenge that I can't even imagine. Like Pam would be in the running for that. So I'm thinking Eve? Probably I am incorrect, but whatever.
I'm thinking Constantine.
The second time the 12 wanted him dead.
Yeah.
I also thought of Constantine.
Okay.
Any more predictions or wishes?
No.
My prediction is that we're never gonna find out who's at the top of the 12.
Yeah. I feel like we've already said that, maybe.
Very possible. But until now, I thought that we might find out. But now that this episode happened, I'm again at the we're never gonna find out. It's just gonna be this whole thing about how power can never be truly removed because it just transfers to another person, yada.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, your circular 12 theory
will
prove
exactly.
to be true. Yes.
And it will destroy us all.
The theory?
Yeah, no, I was just turning this circle into an Ouroboros.
My wish is that we see more of Villanelle and Gunn's new friendship, and that we get to see some more of those fluffy goats. Yes, there we go.
Nice.
Thank you, dear listener, for listening to this episode of Queering Eve. We will record another one. We release new episodes when we can. Have a nice week, and remember, tree. Tree, tree, tree. Fuck, I forgot Switzerland exists.
Sorry, that's okay, please cut this out.
Monaco. She's French
speaking. Ugh, no, Monaco should not exist. Don't even mention it.